Welcome to this podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, exploring aspects of our life and witness at this time.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm Graham Thompson, and I worked for quite a while as Youth Development Officer for the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, helping congregations in their youth ministry. But I'm also a husband and a father of two kids who are aged 10 and 12, and I'm suddenly discovering a whole new angle on relationships with young people, especially as my daughter has become part of the youth ministry in my church. So I've invited two very well qualified folks along to help to discuss what it means to be a disciple maker of your children when they start to reach and go through adolescence. With me today are Gareth Crispin, who's a lecturer in practical theology in Cliff College and is a father of three young people, and Gillian Spires, who's a mum of four and a member of First Dromara Presbyterian. I would love you both just to introduce yourselves in a bit more detail, to tell us a bit about your family, your children in particular, and the key roles that you have in your life and in your church, your local church. Gillian, would you like to begin, please?
Okay, so I'm Gillian. I've been married to David for 21 years, and we have four children, a dog called Pip, and six chickens. My eldest is called Joy, and she's 19 and she's in her first year at Queen's. My second is called Leah, and she's at the academy studying for her A2s. Then Jonathan is 11 and he is in P7. And Jessica is almost 10 and she's in P6. So I've been a secondary school teacher for 26 years, teaching business studies, IT and religious studies. And for the last 5 years, I've been teaching part-time and counselling in schools part-time. And I've actually just retired from teaching at the end of September to work full-time as a secondary schools counsellor. So it's a bit of a shift for me in this past month. I've been a lifelong member of First Dromara Presbyterian Church. That's the church that I grew up in. And while I wasn't brought up in a Christian home, I was taken to church and Sunday school and GB and youth club and youth fellowship and whatever else was going, I was taken along to it. My husband has been a lifelong member of my church as well. And I've always been involved there in leading the praise and in the choir. I'm a GB officer, and my husband and I lead the Holiday Bible Club together.
And you still found time to come and help us with this podcast, Gillian. I don't know how you did that, but thank you for coming and joining this conversation and bringing all of that richness of your life with us. We're looking forward to hearing some of that. And Gareth, tell us a bit about your life and situation.
Hi, Graham. Thanks for the invitation to come on today. I work at Cliff College. I've been there 2 years now, 2.5 years, lecturing practical theology. I lead one of the BA programs, and I lecture in youth ministry, family, intergenerational church ministry, that sort of thing. So before that, I was a youth, children, and families minister for 11 years in an Anglican church, and before that, a Baptist church. And before that, I was at theological college. And before that, if I can remember back that far, it's a long time ago now, I used to work in finance, so in the City of London, for about 7 years. So yeah, so I currently live in Buxton. So Cliff College is in Derbyshire, and I live about half an hour away in Buxton, which you might know from the Buxton water that you can buy. And yeah, we've lived there for 2.5 years, having moved from over towards near Manchester. So I've got three boys who are aged 12, 14 and 15, nearly 16. And they keep me very busy. I'm still the tallest, but not by very much. I'm about to lose that battle with my 15-year-old, who I'm sure will be a lot taller than I am now. So, so in our local church, we're in an Anglican church. I'm not Anglican by confession. I don't really know what I am by confession, other than being Christian. You'll be glad to hear. Yeah, but not Anglican by confession, but that's the local evangelical church that there is in Buxton for us. And so we're there, and I serve just doing normal, you know, sort of church member type things. We're helping with some of the teenagers at the moment. I help with year 10s. That's the group that I help with, leading services, that sort of thing. So yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thank you to both of you for joining us. And we want to talk about what it means to be a parent at this time, particularly as our kids get older. But I don't want to miss the fact that we are in strange times and that we're still in a pandemic. We're maybe coming out of it, but it's made a difference to life, to our world, to our routines, to our families. I wonder just what your reflections briefly might be on how this pandemic has changed patterns of church, on family life, and particularly discipleship of teenagers. Does this feel like a moment of crisis for all that, or is it a moment of opportunity? What do you think?
Gillian, do you want to go first? I'm happy to if you don't.
You go ahead.
Well, I'll start with the cliche, which is nevertheless, I think, really true, is that in the last 18 months, we've all been in a storm, but we've all been in different boats. And I think that's true for discipleship as much as it is for anything else. I mean, I think when most people use that idea, it's with respect to things going on in sort of, we'll call it, you know, secular society, just general people's lives. But I think it's true for discipleship as well. You know, people have had remarkably different experiences of the pandemic. I mean, we don't want to miss the kind of seriousness of some people's situations. You know, some people have been in desperate situations and have really struggled, and some people have flourished and thrived. It's really suited some people, and that's for all sorts of reasons that, you know, we can't really focus on now. But I think it's definitely true that I think reading some research from, it's a friend of ours, Graham, that you and I both know, Sarah Holmes at Liverpool Hope University, and she was doing some research which kind of looked at this gap that's grown up, which is mirrored in schools, actually. The kind of, you know, you get this attainment gap in the schools in the pandemic, where those that had sort of supportive home environments tended to do okay. Some actually did really well once they were taken out of problematic environments in school situations, and some did, you know, really badly. They had really problematic home environments, which meant that being at home was, you know, disastrous for education. And I think there's been similar for churches and discipleship. You know, some, I think, was Sarah's conclusion was parents and home environments that were already positively predisposed to discipleship did better. It actually got better. They spent more time together. They used it as an opportunity. It was an opportunity and they took it. Those that were already struggling with that kind of idea, it just got worse. You know, they just didn't, you know, it didn't help at all. It just, it got on top of them, and they found it a real pressure, this idea of not only having to do all the schooling, but also getting emails from church saying, hey, why don't you do this with your kids? And then like panicking and getting guilty and all the rest of it. So yeah, I think same storm, different boats, really different experiences. I don't know if that chimes with anything you've felt.
Yeah, well, it certainly was it had a huge impact on it. It was a huge change because, yeah, number one, we were all working from home. So I was working pretty much full time from home. My husband was working from home. My two older girls were studying for their GCSEs and A-levels, and they were totally thrown into disarray because they didn't know how their results were going to be calculated and how it was going to affect just their futures and their applications for university and all those sorts of things that at that age they're really thinking of. And then I had the two younger ones who had to be homeschooled while I was working full time as well. So it was busy. It was busy and it was a challenge. But I mean, we managed just by actually having a routine. We just got a routine. We printed it out. We stuck it up in the kitchen and we stuck to the routine. And, you know, we had set meal times. We had set times for school. We made a point as a family of the six of us going for a walk each day before lunch. And our lives were just busy. On top of that, church then was going online, and my husband, he's was the one who was sort of heading up, you know, trying to sort of organize the recordings and all of the streaming and everything else. So, you know, it was a very busy house, but I would say that, yes, we thrived and we just got on with it. We missed the contact with family. We missed the contact with the church friends. The children missed all of their church activities and after school activities. But things, we just got on with it, and church went online. We sat down as a family and we watched church together. We worked together to produce praise items to help with church. And, you know, so it was busy, but
it sounds like you're one of the families that Gareth just described that was predisposed to embrace the challenge, yeah, and make it an opportunity. And I guess maybe in some ways that's in miniature what parenting is all about. You know, parenting can feel like a challenge and it can feel like a privilege. And I wonder your reflection first, Gillian, then I'll ask Gareth the same question. You know, what would you say is the greatest challenge and the greatest privilege of being a Christian parent, particularly as our kids get older?
Yeah, there's loads of challenges with teenagers, and there's loads of privileges. I think one of the greatest challenges is letting go. For me, it's letting go. And, you know, my girls are both young Christians and they're both walking with God and they're strong in their faith. And I am very thankful to God for that. And I have to trust them enough to let them go and let them make their own decisions. And I'm always there for them to help them where I can and to guide and to pray with them when they need me to do that. But I think one of the greatest challenges is letting know and having the wisdom really to let them make their own decisions and trusting them to do that. And just to be there to support them in that process. So letting go, I think, is one of the main challenges. And one of the greatest privileges for me is watching them grow in their faith and watching them become young leaders and watching them develop and having a real passion for God and a real passion and a real heart for service. And another privilege is praying with them, actually just sitting with them and praying with them and encouraging them.
That is really encouraging, Gillian. Thank you for sharing that. Gareth, what's your response, just purely as a dad, to that, the privileges and challenges?
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going to agree with Gillian. I'm not going to give you any different perspectives here. I would say ditto. Yeah, I think it's absolutely right. I mean, obviously, you know, maybe Gillian and I have got similar experiences at this point, but there'll be different challenges for other people. You know, we have huge challenges, maybe if their children have got severe additional needs, you know, physical or mental or whatever. But I would be right there with Gillian that I'm always toying with this idea of, I mean, my wife's brilliant at this, and I'm pretty terrible at it. I end up just trying to do things for them. And often they're quite happy for that, you know, but actually they're getting that 14, 15, 16. And you know, Gillian, you're further down the line with a couple of yours. You know, you need, for their own good, for your own good, you need to let them do that. And it's a real challenge because it's easier to do it. And sometimes you feel as it, you know, you love them, so you want to help them and you've got the best intentions, but, you know, in the long run, it's not great to keep doing that. And the privilege, yeah, just the same. Just, yeah, the fact that you have, you know, such an influence, that awesome, you know, opportunity, especially early on, to input into someone's life, when that is a real privilege.
One of the things I discovered as a parent because of periods of lockdown is that the gradual giving of more responsibility to my kids had suddenly come upon us, and we, you know, suddenly had to let them go and meet their friends after school on a Friday and think, and I was going, oh, can I do that? You know, and it is hard because we, you know, we feel our way into those things, and suddenly we're having to reevaluate because time has sort of stopped and then moved forward.
Can I ask Gillian a question?
Yes,
Gillian, do you find it easier as you're going through your children, as it were, you know, the letting go, does it get easier or does it get harder?
I actually think it does, yeah.
Get easier?
Yes, I think it gets easier. I think you sort of do get more used to it. I would say my eldest has a very different mummy to what my youngest has. and they would, my two older girls would keep us going that we're spoiling the wee ones. But I do think it gets easier, but I think it very much depends on the child and the personality of the child,
yeah,
and just what their situation is and how they are.
When we come back to that issue of how things change as kids get older, I want to think specifically for a moment about what we do differently as families who are Christians. And Gareth, a few years ago, you wrote a book with a mutual friend of ours, Ed McKenzie, about family worship. And it was a very practical little book that still, you know, a lot of folks use, find very helpful. And I wonder, what was your kind of conviction or heart in writing that book? And what did you seek to achieve through writing that wee resource?
Yeah, the conviction was that the impact of parents on the faith of youth and children is so significant that the church needs to take that seriously and train them to to do that, to help them to disciple in the home. And we were focusing particularly on kind of, if you like, specific acts of worship rather than every day, you know, kind of along the way. Not that the along the way discipleship isn't important, absolutely vital, but we wanted to try and, if you like, rediscover, because it was there in previous generations, to rediscover these kind of set pieces of, if you like, worship time, reading the Bible, praying, possibly singing if you've got a voice or an instrument. So that was our conviction. And what we were trying to do then specifically with the book functionally, if you like, was to make it look doable, or rather show it to be as doable as it is, because I think some people were very frightened by it. So it's a very simple little book, Together With God. I'm going to plug it shamelessly now. So Together With God, you can look at our website, and we've got a podcast there as well, but the book is there available to buy. And it's very short, it's very colourful, very presented almost like a recipe book that you just flick through. And it's 15 examples of people doing different things in the home in terms of worship, collective, you know, kind of family worship. And it's just supposed to demystify it and say, look, there's 15 different ways, different families, different situations with different age children, different cultures, and different sort of family situations. And they're all having a go. They're all finding it hard. They're all making mistakes. That's fine. Why don't you just have a go? And it's just there to sort of, if you like, show that the barrier isn't as high as maybe you think it is. Just have a go.
So it's not just for those very, very holy families and ministers' families and, you know, people who lecture in theological colleges and that kind of thing.
No, absolutely not. And we deliberately picked people who didn't fit into those categories. Yeah, yeah. So we deliberately picked people who were just, you know, I mean, I don't know about normal. I mean, who's normal?
No.
But yeah, not full-time Christian workers, etc. Just people. Yeah, just people.
So Gillian, in your experience, what sort of things characterized your home life in terms of worship and Christian practices and so on, on a day-to-day sort of basis? What things did you find helpful?
I've sort of been thinking about this, sort of like, you know, I would just describe us as a normal family. And, you know, when the children were smaller, we definitely sat down with them and read with them and prayed with them. As they've got older, we would pray with them when they're having difficulties, or, you know, very often if I see one of them struggling, I would, you know, just get alongside them and sit with them and see what's going on. And we'd just sit and pray with them and maybe help to point to the scriptures at a particular verse that might help, and, you know, and just to be there. But as a family, really, much of our sharing has really just been our lives and trying to set a good example, and, you know, a good example in our just how we live and in our church life. And, you know, in our church life, we've always tried to include the children. You know, church isn't something that they do and we do. It's something that we always do together. And I'll give you a simple example of that is my husband and I lead the Holiday Bible Club, and my two wee ones, from they have been fit to be in the shop, they come with us to help pick the biscuits and the sweets and the prizes. And, you know, they get really excited about that. They help us choose the praise and quiz ideas. So it's really something that we've done, really just, it's just been part and parcel of our life. And it's something really that we just do as a family.
So you're kind of modeling Christian practices, yeah, and Christian, yeah, disciplines, say, just as you go along.
Yeah, I would say it's modeling, and church is really just something that we do as a family, and it's part of our pattern of life. It's not an add-on. It's not an add-on, something that we, you know, do specifically. I think that's really just the main point. It's just part of our life, and we've always included the children in that and involved them in that and in what we're doing.
That sounds great. And I'm wondering, does that change? Because patterns of family life change, and I'm discovering that as you know, a parent of a P7 and a year eight, you know, there's been big shifts. And yet, you know, how does that affect our the way that we express our faith? I read recently a little article by Cara Powell that you might have read from Fuller Theological Seminary. And she talked about, you know, during lockdown, sitting down with her kids and wanting to do a lot of the things they used to do, and then finding actually some of that didn't work, but what really worked for her was reading scripture out loud, that they would just read out passages of scripture, and that because her kids are now teenagers, and she said that really connected. I wonder whether there's Christian practices that either of you would say, you know, as your kids get older, this is a good way. I mean, Gillian, I thought, was a great example, just praying through stuff. You know, if there's an issue, let's pray about it. You know, Gareth, have you any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I think, what Gillian's sort of brought attention to, I think, is obviously very important, the idea of modelling. And yeah, there's an authenticity around that, I think, which is important, especially as you, I mean, children obviously soak up what you do, not just what you say. But, you know, teens are very, they've got hypocrite antenna, you know, ready, haven't they? So they'll watch you and it's one of those things, is you think they're not watching you and you can't get, but then you know they are. I think in terms of practices, yeah, I'm not very, what's the word, liturgical, or I don't think in that kind of way very much. So I mean, the core practice for us would be a regular Bible reading. I think two or three times a week now. This is one of the things that faded in the pandemic, which hit us just after. Not faded in the pandemic, was reignited in the pandemic.
That's good.
Yeah, no, it was because we had this, as my oldest kind of hit high school, the kind of regular pattern of Bible reading, which I used to do in the morning with all three of my boys, fell apart. And it was for all sorts of reasons. He'd got older, he started getting up later, he was getting more tired. He had a very difficult first year at school, which didn't positively predispose him to the mornings. All sorts of things hit, which meant for about 2 years, we just did nothing. And then the pandemic hit and it was like, well, we're all just here. And absolutely reignited, you know, kind of like times of reading scripture together. That's what I guess is the main practice for us. So I guess it's the everyday along the way, which is the authentic, important modeling piece, which, you know, Gillian's already spoken about. But I think just the Cara Powell reading scripture thing and just asking a few simple questions about it. What do you think this means? And yeah, you know, sometimes it's just, well, I'd say most of the time to them, it's just like, oh yeah, whatever. And then every now and again, it will just really ignite and take off. Suddenly you'll go, we've been here 15, 20 minutes talking about this and it was only supposed to be a 5 minute thing. So, yeah.
I wonder whether, just listening to either of you, if you have like a rule of thumb that you could share that are just about, you know, the day-to-day practical principles of life that you've developed as Christian parents who are wanting to lead your children to follow Jesus. I mean, if you were to try and sum that up to a parent like me who's coming into that phase of life and say, how do we do this thing as a Christian disciple maker?
Who's going first?
Gillian, what
well,
kind of...
Well, okay. Well, I think, you know, be yourself. Again, we've talked about being authentic. Your children know the real you and don't try to be something that you're not, you know. Be yourself and, you know, don't try to be something different in church or outside the home than you are, you know, at home. Lead by example and just make sure that your children experience Christian love and grace and joy and discipline from you. And, you know, one of the main things for me is not to push them, because you'll turn them away, you know. And, you know, I think we have to trust that, you know, if we live as godly lives as we possibly can and set as good an example as we can, and we are kind and encouraging to others and we're not afraid to work hard, and, you know, we say no when things don't sit right with us, and, you know, by not asking our children to do anything that we're not prepared to do ourselves, and by all of those things, that they will learn more of the God that we love. And hopefully in time they will come to him. And, you know, I think we have to trust that God will save our children. And we have to, just as parents, continue to believe that and trust that. And we have to leave it into his hands, and we just have to do our best. And there's none of us perfect as parents, and that's okay. And we all make mistakes. But I think at the end of the day, we just have to set that example, be authentic, and trust that God will save our children.
Those are wise words. It's the example bit that worries me most.
I'm sure you're a great example, Graham. I would say hearty amen to all that. And I would seek to do that, as you say, Graham, acknowledging that we're probably failing a lot of the time. The grace of God, there we go. Yeah. I guess the couple of things that come to my mind is, one is about questions, and one is about engaging with culture. So first, the question thing. I think questions are really interesting both ways. So I think you should really create a culture where questions are fine. No question off limits. Yeah, you ask a question, I'm not going to pull a face which shows you that you shouldn't have asked that question, that it's somehow embarrassing or off limits. There's nothing off limits. We're going to ask all questions open. This question is going to be asked once at a certain age, and I've got one shot at answering it. Because obviously when a child asks a question at 5, 10, 15, the question is going to be different, or asked differently, or asked for a different reason. And don't worry about giving them everything all in one go, because actually sometimes you know, you say one thing and a five-year-old goes, oh, fine, that's good enough for me. And you don't need to then try and tell them everything that they're going to need, want to know when they're 15. You just tell them what they want to know now and stop. You know, and then they come back to it and go, when I was five, you said this, or when I was 10, you said this, but what about this? And then you go, okay, let's pick up the conversation again. That's fine. Don't worry about that. So acknowledge that questions are important and actually be really thankful. A lot of parents come to me and say, my children are asking me so many questions. And I just go, brilliant. Yeah, that's a good thing. You know, they're going to ask their questions somewhere. It's great they're asking you. But then you can turn that around as well. And I find asking questions of your children and young people is really, really important. Sometimes you want to stoke the fire. If you think they're old enough, you say, well, what about this? You're reading a Bible passage and there's an obvious question to you, which is like, I don't understand how that works. And they're just going, yeah, I don't have any questions. And you say, well, I've got a question for you then. Yeah, how does this work? And they're like, oh, I don't know. Like, well, let's think about it then. You know, you stoke the fire a little bit like that. So I think questions are really important. I think engaging with culture is really important as well. So what I mean by that is, and this is something where parents really are in the box seat, because, you know, when you're watching TV or listening to the radio or you know, whatever it is you're doing it in the home, you can see it. You know, I got my boys going around the around the house, you know, with TikTok blaring out. You know, and so I can say, oh, that's interesting. What's that? And they'll show me and I'm there. And youth workers and vicars and ministers aren't necessarily at those times. So, and it'll be just like, you know, we can throw little things in. Like I like playing games, like especially when there's adverts out there, we're watching TV and it'll just be like, you know, it'll be like the blurb in the advert will be going, blah, 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 blah. And I'll go, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Give us all your money. Give us all your money. Give us all your money. And I'll just sort of like, I'll murmur this underneath, because obviously any advert is trying to get you to part with your money. And so my boys find that funny and they pick up on it. Whenever they see an advert, they all start going, give us your money, give us your money, give us your money. And just playing with culture like that, saying, why are these people creating this cultural product, this film or this poem or this TikTok piece? Why are they doing it? What message are they trying to, you know, convey to you? It's not just entertainment. You know, what are they? They're trying to sell you something. Even if they don't want your money, they're trying to get you to buy into a way of looking at the world. What is that? And is it good?
That's really, because it's really practical, Gareth. And funny, what you said there reminded me of a resource I came across recently for parents, and it's called One Conversation. And it was inspired by a teenager who told this organization, I've only ever had one significant conversation with my father. And they were like, oh, isn't that terrible? You know what? And she said, it's a conversation that started years ago and it's still going on. And they're trying, and you know, this resource was to encourage parents, just like you were saying, to have this conversation that just goes from day to day and picks up and leaves off. But
can I just say at the end, because there's a resource that comes to my mind by Ted Turnow. I think it's called Pop Parenting or something like that. Pop as in popular culture. And that's a great book to think about how you do parenting through engaging with popular culture, which is great because then you get to sit down and watch films and stuff like that. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, not at all. Gareth, you have done a lot of writing, studying, speaking about the relationship between churches and parents. And you recently wrote a chapter in a book called The Generative Church, where you looked at the role of parents as disciple makers, church as disciple makers, and which one is more important or primary. Now, I don't want to ask you that question, but I do want to ask you the question, does the answer to that question change as kids get older? The answer to the question, who's more important, parents or church? Do you think there's a shift? Do you think one becomes more important as children get older?
I'll say some things, but I'd love to hear Gillian's thoughts on this, because, you know, she's got you know, guys down further down the line than us. I mean, to my mind, yes, it does. I see, if you like, a passing over of pastoral responsibility from the family to the church. And I think you can see that. People can go read the chapter if they want to kind of see the detailed argument. But I kind of basically think, for biblical theological reasons, you know, Genesis through to Revelation, we see that passing over of responsibility from a biological family, there's at least a move in biblical theology from a biological family to a sort of, we call it a spiritual family or the eternal family, the church. And we see that, of course, in general parenting. You know, my relationship with my boys when they were like 3, 4, 5 is very different in terms of got to keep them alive by putting food, you know, literally feeding them when they're young, right? But that changes over time. They gain independence, but you don't want them to be independent. You want them to be interdependent with other Christians. So basically, I think for various reasons that are sociological and theological, I think that relationship does pass from one to the other. And therefore, I think actually, and this was the bit for me that really, really struck me, I think my role as a parent is to see that and to plan for it and parent in that way. So to actually not simply think, I want my boys to be Christians. It's I want them to see the church as their family. And that's actually a very different thing. You know, it's obviously connected, but it is a very different thing. It's like, it's not just like getting someone over the line to be saved for heaven. It's like, no, it's to see these people as your eternal family. You know, to see me as a brother in Christ rather than just your dad. But I don't know, Gillian, what's your experience of that? You know, because you talked about the letting go, but are you letting them go, you know, do you feel like you're letting them go into the church or I don't know?
Yeah, well, I have to say my children are all involved in the church and, you know, church has a vital role to play. And I don't think it just ends whenever they leave Sunday school or Bible class. And it doesn't just end whenever the children become Christians. You know, I think the church really has to step up and be there and provide the opportunities and provide the support for them. But I don't think as parents we can step back either. I think no matter what age, we can't just leave it to the church and we can't just expect the church to do everything as to their spiritual development and growth. And I think that, again, I'm going probably back to this again, we need to continue to provide the example ourselves to, you know, make sure that they can come to us for guidance when they need it. And when things are tough, and that we encourage them in their walk with God and just have an open relationship with them that, you know, and let them know, you know, being a Christian is hard, you know, as a parent, let them know being a Christian is hard and that we all have our challenges and that's okay. Mm. And encourage them to talk to us. But I think the church also needs to embrace them. And I know my children get a lot of friendship and love and support from their home church and have a lot of good friends there. And I think that's another thing is if they have a lot of good friends through the church, then that's something that helps them in their walk. But I also think the church needs to provide opportunities for our young people to serve. And it's not just that our young people just are there. Mm. I think they need to be involved. And I think the children that thrive and grow in their faith are the ones that are actually involved and serve and are really involved in their church. So I believe it's a two-way process.
It is, Gillian, and yet the realities of being a teenager now, it is hard, you know, and there are huge, mm-hmm. and young people, I think, in many ways have taken a big part of the brunt of this pandemic in terms of just confidence and the things they've lost out on and so on. But even aside from this particular circumstance, I think as they grow up, they're facing all sorts of challenges. Do you think, as your girls particularly have got older, you've looked for particular things from the church to as you look to the church to partner with you in discipling? Are there things that you particularly need, maybe youth leaders or GB leaders or whatever, to do that maybe they can do possibly better or in a different way than you can as a parent?
Absolutely. I mean, they can provide the opportunities for them to get together with other like-minded people and other Christians. And they can, you know, I'm a firm believer in it's the friendships that they make are vital. And I think the leaders really need to just get alongside to them. They don't have to do much. They just have to show interest in them and set an example in them and, you know, show an interest in their day-to-day lives, ask them questions about how they're doing. For example, we would have some leaders, you know, and like they would text them in the morning of an exam and, you know, all those wee things are just show that they're loved and they're cared for and they're actually valued in the church. And I just think that is so important as well.
What about you, Gareth? Is that your experience as a parent?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. But I think also, and I know this from both sides, having been a youth and families minister in a church for 11 years and now not, and being a parent, that you're also, in addition to what Gillian said, you're also wanting the church, and this picks up on something else you said, Gillian, earlier on, which is you want them to provide participative experiences, you know, sort of places to serve, to ground it, you know, because to young people, and maybe it's just all adults, everyone anyway, but it's that idea of it's not just about what we believe, but what we practice, you know, so that actually it's our practices that help us in our discipleship, not just sort of, it's not just like, we're not just brains on sticks, you know, we're bodies that have you know, sort of things that we do and we learn through what we're doing. So it's in the gifting of the church, if the church leadership, to shape things in such a way that provide those spaces and those opportunities, not just for peer, like you were saying, you know, peer group, places of like-minded people, but places within the wider church for them to serve and to accommodate them into that, those sorts of environments, make adjustments, make room for them at the table to say, here's a place for you, a valued place, not tokenism. You know, we want you to contribute to this. We want you to input into this. How do you think we should go about this? How do you think we should do it? And to actually take that seriously and show that they can make an impact. So I think that would be really important as well.
Thank you. I have really deeply appreciated not just my PCA role, but as another parent, just listening to the encouraging reflections that you both have shared. And I want to give you both one question to finish with. I imagine you can time travel and you can bring back that wonderful thing called hindsight to just as your kids reached the end of primary stage of life. Knowing what you know now, what would you say to yourself then, or to parents like me who are at that stage now, about what it means to be a discipling parent of a teenager? I'll start with Gillian.
Wow. Gosh, there's loads I would say. But I think the first thing I would say is just do your best. Don't be so hard on yourself as a parent. We all make mistakes, and that is okay. You know, if your heart is in the right place and if you are following God and you are doing your best by your children, nobody expects any more than that. God doesn't expect any more than that. And it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay not to have all of the answers to all of the questions. That's okay. And actually, that's really healthy for our children if we sort of say, sorry, I made a mistake there, or I was wrong. Or it's really healthy if we say to them, do you know what? That's a really good question and I don't have all the answers. So I think it would just be do your best. Don't be hard on yourself. And, you know, it's okay to make mistakes, and we all do. And that's okay.
And that's the gospel of grace, isn't it? And we need more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of that. Thank you, Gillian. What about you, Gareth?
Yeah, so generally speaking, the first thing I'd say to myself is enjoy your evenings because you're about to lose them. So, you know, by the time my 15-year-old goes to bed, I'm done. I'm off to sleep as well, you know. So that's it. Me and my wife, we don't get any time anymore like that. So enjoy your evenings. You're about to lose them. But more seriously, from a discipleship perspective, you know, I would just say, you know, Gareth, you're the parent. And there's several things to unpack there. We don't have time to talk about all of them, but you know, you're the parent. And for me particularly, one of the things about that which was meaningful is that I get angry, and I would sometimes have like blazing rows with one of my sons. There's one of them in particular, I shan't mention which. And he'd be so up, you know, sort of like dig his heels in. And I'd end up having like a blazing row with him. He'd be like not 8 or 9, you know. And then I'd walk upstairs and my wife would say, what's that about? And I say, well, he's been so. And I just think, I'm about to use the word childish. And it's like, yeah, but he's a child, you know. I mean, what do you expect? You're the parent, you know, you be the parent, you're the parent. You know, let them be the child, you know. And that's not to say we shouldn't expect maturity over time, et cetera. But just remember that you're the parent in that way. But also in terms of drawing boundaries, I'm the lax one in our household. You know, I'm the one that says, okay, yeah, you can have another chocolate biscuit. Yeah, that's me. And I think I would just say to myself, you know, draw the boundaries a bit more. Don't be afraid to be the parent, because, you know, you have got some decent life experience and you know a bit more than them. So, yeah, lovingly explain it, but be the parent. Don't be ashamed of that.
Absolutely. And I think what you said about boundaries is so true. And I think that a lot of our young people struggle because they don't have boundaries in place, and children actually thrive with boundaries. So, you know, I think, yes, be the parent, and boundaries are okay. Children thrive with boundaries.
I'm so encouraged. I think what I'm reflecting on here is that we can be on our own as parents and feel isolated, but there's real value in talking to one another as parents. And I think what you've shared here will be a real encouragement to the parents listening to this, to those who want to support parents too, as it has to me. And I hope it encourages parents in our churches to maybe have these kinds of conversations, you know, now that we can actually see each other again, to have a cup of coffee together and just talk about what it means to be Christian parents, to be parents, first of all, and to be Christian disciple makers. And we can encourage one another and pray for one another. And it's my prayer that God will continue to bless the Spires family and the Crispin family and your kids, that they will grow up to be wonderful men and women following after Jesus, as I'm sure they will. So thank you so much for joining us, and thank you to those listening in. God bless you and your families.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. Thanks for joining us.